Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, Ferment About It over here. Welcome to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. My name is Chris Guzmi.
And I'm Mary Izette, and we're your co-host for Fermentation Adventures on Heritage Radio Network. We broadcast live every Monday at 7 p.m. We're archived at HeritageRadioNetwork.org as well as iTunes.
They're tootin'. Today, we have some very, very good friends in the house from Brooklyn Homebrew, Benjamin Stutz and Daniel Safaro. How y'all doing?
Hi.
Great, guys. How you doing?
Fantastic. I'm happy. Today's Monday.
Thanks for having us.
Most people don't like Mondays. I'm into it.
I know. Smiling on a Monday.
I know. Mary, do we have any announcements? There's things going on?
I don't think we do. Where the Wild Beers are, we should mention that. May 19th.
What is Where the Wild Beers are?
It's like it's a sour expo. So basically you bring beers to share, sour beers to share in particular. And it's a good old get-together. You get to meet other sour beer lovers and taste lots of sour beers from all over. There's like, you have to register online. You register your beer. There's a nominal fee. It's on Sunday, May 19th, which also coincidentally happens to be Hawaiian Underground, which is a Heritage Radio Network event. That's also May 19th, but they don't really overlap.
No,
the Heritage
we're
Radio
be at
Network.
Both.
Yeah, it doesn't start till 5 for the regular.
One thing that's cool about where the Wild Beers are is that it's a participant-run beer event.
Yeah.
So you bring two bottles, sour bottles. You all run with the theme and roll with it. And
yep. It's like a big bottle share, but it's more regulated. Except it's organized, which is a great thing, I think. So check it out. Just Google Where the Wild Beers Are, and it will come up. It's at the Gutter in North Williamsburg on Sunday, May 19th. So I think that's a cool thing, especially if you're interested in brewing sour beers, or, this is a great place to taste a lot of commercial examples. Also, if you're a ghetto yeast collector, hey, there's probably going to be some that you could take home with you.
Absolutely, and that's relevant, especially when we get to the second segment today, because we have our friends from Y-Yeast, Greg Doss and Jessica Odhill. We did an interview down at CBC, and they're talking about their new private collection available now.
Yep.
And one of them was... Was cultivated from a bottle from Belgium.
Yep,
the Berliner Weiss blend is that?
No, the Flanders Golden.
Yep.
Yeah, tasty. Jesse just kind of.
Did he tell you which bottle?
No, but he said we could tell from the name.
You could probably deduce it from the name.
Oh,
so we'll have to guesses. Think about that.
But anyway, we're really excited. You guys are here for multitudes of reasons. Yeah. You guys started Brooklyn Homebrew. When I first started homebrewing here in New York City, there was not a homebrew store that I could take the train to and get to.
There was no homebrew store that was dedicated to homebrewing, right? When you started homebrewing?
No, not in New York. No, not in the five boroughs where I could take a train to get to.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the fathers in the area are Carp's Homebrew Supply, as you get
in
towards the island.
Yep.
And also Brew Shop at Cornell's has been doing stuff for a very long time. There's a Queens Botanical store, but it's not dedicated entirely to homebrew.
No, mostly dedicated to growing an illegal plant that's closely related to hops.
Indoor gardening.
Yes, I've been there. I bought some homebrew supplies there way back when.
Yep.
But all of us had to basically order our supplies through the internet. Or mail order, actually. I can remember calling up Keystone and asking about a particular hop, and they, ship my stuff off. Mm-hmm. Keystone in Pennsylvania, which is also a lovely homebrew store. But it's frustrating because we couldn't do things on the fly. You had to plan out what you needed. You had to, do your order. And then you guys, when you first started, I can remember meeting you at a Malted Barley Appreciation Society meeting.
Yep.
And you were selling stuff out of your apartment in Sunset Park.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Those were the dark ages.
Yeah, we kind of had to improvise for...
Yeah.
6 months or so there. But
and then when
works.
Did you officially open your current location?
It's been about, has it been 3.5 years since we opened? It's been 3.5 years.
If you count the 6 months in our apartment, it's been four years.
4 years. It's been 4 years since we've actually been in business. 3.5 at our location on 8th Street.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you guys are in the Gowanus area.
The Gowanus.
The new hip.
The new hip neighborhood. 8th Street, 3rd Avenue.
It's officially hip now.
Yeah. It's got that barbecue place, right? Once you're like your local barbecue joint gets written up in the New York Times, I'm pretty sure that's hip.
Yeah, and 420 Blackbirds.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, those pies are delicious.
One of the things I think is really great about having a homebrew store is it breeds a community. Mm-hmm. And you guys have classes, and they're, you know, when you go to the homebrew store, you're meeting other people of like mind. And you know, also what happened when your presence sparked new homebrew clubs as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just by promoting homebrewing. Yeah. And yeah.
It's like every neighborhood has a homebrew shop now.
Yeah, I think.
Or a homebrew club.
Yeah. Homebrew club, yeah, which homebrew I think club, is really great. And, you know, to have it all, not every club is for everybody, and they don't all meet at the same time. But hypothetically speaking, if we have any listeners in the Midwest, what were some of the challenges that you took? Well, first of all, why did you do this? And then what are some of the challenges? And would you recommend doing this in where there's not a homebrew store?
For me, it was just kind of like, why not? Because it was all really Danielle's idea. We were both working in restaurants for 8 or 9 years at least at that point. And our restaurant, the owners were selling it. We needed something else to do. We loved Beer Table. It was right across the street. Mm-hmm. That was our bar. And we thought, why can't we do something like this? Like, we just wanted to steal Justin's awesome idea. But we didn't have any money. And Danielle suggested, well, there's nowhere to get homebrew supplies, and it's got to be cheaper to start a retail store than a bar and a restaurant, which it's much, much cheaper.
In case anybody's wondering.
And so we tried it, and there was, you know, an instant market, like, because, you said, everybody was used to ordering online. So,
but you guys come from a culinary background.
We worked in fine dining restaurants.
And had you homebrewed very much before?
Yeah.
Since 2001 or 2002, yeah. I think we started, because a sanitation class that is required by law, because we needed the sanitation certificate.
Did you get
Chicago?
The food?
Oh, in Chicago.
Oh, in Chicago.
Different thing, not the food protection certificate.
Same thing, but the Chicago version of it. Yeah.
We had to take it again when we moved here, but the teacher was an avid homebrewer, and it was a 3-day course.
He's obsessed with homebrewing.
And he just wouldn't stop talking about it, so we were like, hey, let's give it a shot. So I got the joy of homebrewing, read through it, and gave it a shot. So
that's awesome. Is that... is that your recommended book for the start homebrew?
Yes.
There's a lot of good ones. I mean, I really love How to Brew, too.
Yeah.
They're both great starting points. But
I think they're each for a different type of person.
That's true. Yeah.
I think How to Brew is, like, for the real, like, hardcore, like, nerdy types. And then the people that are just kind of, like, more calm and chill about it, I think they should read The Joy of Homebrewing.
Which fits. I'm the How to Brew person.
Yeah, well,
he took a totally different approach.
I had a different approach. I mean, the Dave Miller book is kind of the one that I took, and what I got from that is be scared, very scared. There's germs everywhere, and so I'm the paranoid, you know. I mean, I don't know what's going on. I just know I'm supposed to be scared to clean everything.
Although I started with Papazian's book as well when I started, yeah. So what have you guys seen in the years since you opened your homebrew store?
Or Brooklyn Homebrew? What have we seen? A lot of change.
I mean, honestly, I think, I mean, we look back, you know, when I started homebrewing in February 2006 and joined the New York City Homebrewers Guild, and now, I mean, homebrewers have multiplied, like, incredibly. Yeah. It's absolutely incredible. Yeah. Not only do we have more homebrew clubs, but there's just more homebrewers, whether they're in a club or not.
Yeah.
And it's definitely due to people, you know, to your store, for sure.
And the quality is consistently great.
Yeah.
And that's contributed to both the store being here, the communities being there, there being more people to talk to, and also the other podcasts and things that are going on. The information is out there and a little bit more readily accessible.
Yeah. When I think you guys, I mean, not only are you providing supplies, quality supplies, but also education. I mean, even people, you're obviously, you know, you have classes and you provide great kits, but you also, I'm sure homebrewers come in and bring samples and ask for your advice.
Yeah, always.
I mean,
least
all of your employees,
once a week,
all of your employees are very educated and very knowledgeable. And
yeah, you have to be, we usually require somebody who's been brewing for a little bit of time to even work at the store. David is the one exception. We kind of brought him up with us. He's been there since the day we opened.
We taught him how to brew.
We taught him how to brew.
A killer home brewer now.
But for the most part, we require that people know how to brew, just because it's, you know, we get a lot of questions, and it's good to have people around that can answer those questions.
Yeah.
So, you know, having some experience definitely helps.
Yep.
Yeah,
and now,
the clubs are multiplying like crazy, and the exchange of ideas and information is easier. The quality of the beer, I think, has improved.
The quality of home brewing is like amazing now.
Oh yeah, definitely.
A lot of our customers, like Greg Dorsky, went on to work at Greenport Harbor, and
Jesse
Ferguson was one of our customers before he went on to work at Carton Brewing.
Carl
Berger. Yeah.
Me.
That's right.
Hello, I'm here. I'm right here, man.
But you were so involved in the homebrewers guild that it was inevitable anyway.
Awesome. What? I had a question and it's gone now.
Sorry.
So let's talk about. All right. So something else special happened last year. You guys opened a warehouse.
We did. Yeah, that was like our first time, essentially expanding. It's been nerve-wracking the entire time. It's pretty much like opening a second business for us. We are at two different locations. It's really hard in New York City to have a large enough location to do what people outside of the city do. So if you're a homebrew shop in the Midwest, you're going to have a lot more space than we have in New York City. We're just...
For much cheaper.
Yeah, for much,
That's
much cheaper.
That's the big factor, the price.
So for us, we had to do two different locations, so we operate out of two different locations. And we ship nationwide now, so it's been an adventure and just learning how to open an entirely new business, essentially. So
yeah.
We really avoided that on purpose. Like, people wanted us to ship from the beginning, and we rejected that idea because we were trying to be the alternative to what everybody was accustomed to. Everybody, including myself, ordered online. So when we first opened, we were like, that's covered. People do that. Great. We don't need to compete with that. We just want to be a local shop. But there were no... That was the only direction for us to go now, is to try to...
Yeah. And, I mean, the question just came up so often. It was just like, do you deliver? Do you ship? Yeah. Do you deliver?
Especially in New York City, because I feel like there's people that are in Queens or the Bronx or
it's hard to get
Staten Island that can't... Yeah, that it's hard. Honestly, it's like an hour and a half commute from the Bronx to get to your store, even like Inwood, upper Manhattan.
Yep.
And now, you guys offer next day shipping from Manhattan.
We do, so anybody who orders... like before, I would even say we say before 11, but I would even say before 1 or 2. The shipping is next day because it's all UPS. UPS is super efficient. That's why we use them, and they're affordable enough for us. But, I mean, most of our customers have been New Jersey, Manhattan, Staten Island. Like, really Manhattan, I'd say.
A lot of Manhattanites.
But,
and there's no place to
get... So they're all local
get...
still.
Yeah.
Most of our customers are all local still.
Yeah. And there's no place to get homebrew supplies in Manhattan now.
I know.
Nope.
That's weird.
Yes.
I mean...
Manhattan homebrew?
I know. Maybe you should think about expanding again.
Maybe.
So we were talking earlier about new hops. So hops, you know, I have less knowledge about hops. We talked about hops with Fritz last week. But what are some of the new hops you guys have seen in the store?
A lot of the new hops, actually, we'll just mention this for... Why not? But we're doing single hop beers for NHC this year, the National Homebrewers Conference. So we're kind of... All the hops that we're going to use are really unusual hops and newer hops that just nobody's really had a chance to play with as much as maybe they would like. But so some of the new hops that we have right now are Belma, which I brought a Belma beer. Belma hop is grown by Hops Direct, and they're in Oregon. And it's a very strange hop. You guys will taste it. There's about 6 ounces in this recipe. But it's got a very, like, distinct, almost like strawberry flavor. That's what I get.
Apricot,
strawberries. Yes, a very delicate flavor. But some of the other ones are, what else are we doing right now? Oh, the Mosaic is really popular right now.
Yep.
Jesse at Carton is doing a beer with that.
Yeah, and I tried Bahia's single hop IPA
with Mosaic. That's great. That's like orange marmalade.
That was delicious.
I like that hop a lot. What else new do we have right
then
now?
Then she had a Legend or Legacy?
Legacy.
Columbia.
Legacy, Comet, which we're out of now, but that was a newer variety.
And the Legacy, because we ran into Bahia at the Brooklyn Zine Fest yesterday, or I did, and she had said she just brewed her IPA with 100% Legacy, and she said it had like a, it almost sounded like Brambling Cross to me. It had like a berry, woody kind of aspect to it.
So there's some Brambling Cross in the bitter.
And the bitter that we just...
Yep.
Which is delicious.
Just poured us,
Boadicea is the dry hop, which can't get here lately.
Yes, we have illegal Boadicea hops.
Illegal?
I don't know if they're illegal.
But you don't know how you got them.
No, a customer from the UK brought us some bricks of actual UK hops. So.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
I like that. I think I stopped by the store right when you got that stuff.
Yeah.
The big gold, it looked like the Willy Wonka candy bars.
Yeah. Yep. So something else new that you guys have is the YE's private collection for spring.
I do, yeah.
And we're going to take a break right now, but when we come back, we're going to go straight into an interview with Greg Voss and Jesse Codd.
Greg Doss.
Greg Doss. Oh,
love Greg Doss.
And Jesse Jess Codhill of Y Yeast, that an interview that we did at the Craft Brewers Conference in the Y Yeast yeast booth. So it's very exciting.
At the trade show.
So we'll see you guys in a few minutes.
Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit www.surreyfarms.com. Did you know HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a member-supported nonprofit organization? If you like what you're listening to, go to our website and click that donate button. Become a member and get special discounts, invites, VIP treatment, t-shirts, and more. Support us in our mission to bring you the freshest food content in the nation.
All right, so Chris and I are here at the Craft Brewers Conference in Washington, D.C., and we are at the YEast booth. We're speaking to Greg Doss and Jess Codhill from YEast Laboratories, and we're going to talk today about your YEast private collection, which is available to pro brewers but also to home brewers as well. I went next door. They're pouring the Allagash, what is it, Platinum Dragon, which is brewed with your YEast 3739 PC Flanders Golden Ale, which is part of your spring collection, private collection. So tell us about this yeast.
Well, this is one strain amongst the other two that you're going to talk about in a second that are going to be available beginning of April, so in about 2 weeks. And actually, just to divert this to Jess, he actually isolated that strain.
Yeah, it's isolated from a bottle of some Belgian beer. I won't say which one it is, but if you look at the name, you might be able to figure out where it came from. But yeah, it was a bottle I had brought back from Belgium and had in the refrigerator for 5 or 6 years. And I drank it and was actually able to pull some yeast out of it that was living. It's an interesting yeast strain. It's has the potential to be very attenuative compared to some other strains, so... This beer, I think, was around a 1078, 1080 original gravity and went down to 1006 in 3 days.
Wow.
So, fast.
And you're, so what would you recommend to homebrewers that are picking a strain up to use? What styles would you recommend?
I think this would be good in a like triples, golden strongs, Belgian dark strong ales. I think it'd be nice in those styles. I haven't tried it in a lighter Belgian
like a
beers,
Belgian.
Like a double or something like that, but it might do okay in that too.
Cool. Any other recommendations for homebrewers using this strain? What's the temperature that you would recommend?
I would run it in the mid to high 60s. I wouldn't let it go too hot. And I'd be prepared for a lower gravity than you might be expecting.
Okay, so more attenuation.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And then let's talk about, so you have two other seasonal releases. You have the Y-East 3191 Berliner Weiss blend. So talk about that blend.
Well, that also is actually something that Jess did a lot of work with, so I'm just going to pass that right back to him.
Okay, back to Jess.
I will say that this was a really neat project. He did a lot of great, actually kind of, maybe not groundbreaking work, but really nice work for the industry, and a lot of people are using some of the techniques that he found out. So,
great.
So, yeah, I've just been interested in that style for a long time, and through messing around with it over the years, kind of found that a lot of the information that was available was not necessarily correct, or it didn't work the way that I was expecting it to or wanted it to. So because of that, we ran some trials and tested lactobacillus and figure out how to make sour beers with it quickly. And so this Berliner Weiss blend is based on some of that information. It's in my opinion, not the perfect way to make a super sour Berliner Weiss, but it's kind of a good compromise. It has all the bugs that you need to make a Berliner Weiss, but you're not having to buy multiple packs to
right.
do one brew.
That drives the cost up.
Yeah,
for sure.
Exactly. So this one's not going to give you a super duper sour Berliner Weiss right away, but it'll give you a nice tart.
Said right away. So if you leave it for longer, would they kind of take over?
I think if you aged it for a few months, you would get some more acidity out of it. There's some Brettanomyces in the blend, so during long-term aging, you might get a little more acidity from the Brettanomyces. And the lactobacillus might do something over a longer period of time.
And what would you recommend as far as like a malt bill for homebrewers that want to make a Berliner Weiss with this? Or any tips?
Yeah, well, the main tip would be to use minimal hops. When I make Berliner Weiss, I don't use any hops in it. The hops will inhibit the lactobacillus right. that's in the blend. So mm-hmm. if you use anything above about 8, you're going to have inhibition of the lactobacillus and it won't get sour.
So if people do use hops, shoot for IBU below 8?
Yeah, I would just throw a tiny amount of hops in for the sake of putting hops in it. But with a beer like that, you're not really needing a lot of bitterness or hop aromas or anything like that. So
I would recommend, you know, just based on some of the stuff that Jess has done, to start with your first batch with 0 IBUs. I mean, literally take the hops completely out, and then maybe in subsequent batches try adding a little bit of hop to it. But you know, I've had some of his beers where there's been no hops added at all, and it was fine. I mean, it was actually a very, very nice beer. So the benefits of not dealing with the inhibitive properties of the hops is definitely outweighs the possibility for needing a little bit more bitterness. The fact that you have so much acid in there that it really balances the beer nicely. So I would recommend, and I was hard. I was kind of staunch that you had to add hops, but he definitely convinced me that I think that's the way to go. Although you did add one pellet, right?
I did. One pellet per 200 gallons.
That's awesome. We have a friend who actually was trying to get a Grotzer. He was trying to make a Grotzer and had to license it with the TTB, but they defined beer as being using malted barley. And he was on the phone with them, and he was like,
100%.
Okay, well, he was using 100% wheat, you know, or smoked wheat for that beer. And then he was like, oh, well, how do I, you know, how much should I put in to make it legally a beer? I was like, some. So he, like, threw a handful of grain or something, or, like, that's it. He's like, okay, well, there's some grain in there or something. And now it's legally making a Grotzer.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then your third private collection release coming out in early April is the Y-East 2575 Kolsch II Yeast.
Yep.
So what do you guys have to say about that yeast?
That strain came from a friend who traveled to Germany, and he brought it back with him. And it was just a strain that sat in our bank for a while, but then we brought it out and turned out to be a really nice Kolsch strain. I like it a little bit better than the than the standard Kolsch. It seems a little cleaner than the other strain, and maybe drops out a little bit better, but not much. It's like most Kolsch strains, takes a long time to settle out.
Right. And what, any recommendations for homebrewers that are going to use this strain?
We just look at the fermentation temperature, trying to keep it in the lower 60s, and I think it's pretty straightforward as far as what it's doing.
So would you do any sort of step thing for temperature? Like, would you start in the lower 60s and go lower, or would you start in high 60s and then end up in the low 60s?
I'm kind of the wrong person to ask, but from a homebrewing aspect, yeah, I try to keep it simplified.
Yeah.
I would probably, for a beer this that you're fermenting in these this temperature range, that you probably cool the wort to that temperature and run it at that temperature.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is there any benefits of messing with the temperature during fermentation with that type?
You know, probably not with that strain. I would probably do the same thing. I'd probably run it in the low 60s and keep it there the entire time. I might raise it up at the end you have a majority of the fermentation byproducts that are happening in those early stages, and I don't really have a problem in raising things up towards the end of fermentation to make sure you have a nice complete fermentation, confirm that diastole is reduced. This strain is super powdery, so diastole is not generally a problem. If it's there, then it gets consumed real quickly. I run that profile with pretty much anything that I'm brewing. I tend to ramp up towards the end just to make sure that you don't really need to put the stress on the yeast at the end. And really, what I need to do is reduce the sugar. So it's kind of my philosophy with that. I really like this strain as well. In fact, I think I like it. It's my favorite Kolsch strain, and it can be used for a variety of beers, not just a Kolsch, but it's really nice in American wheat. I think that, it's hard, side by side, you can tell the subtleties between them. But what I get out of this is that it has a very balanced profile. It's not... it's not in one direction or another, and just mentioned that it's clean. I think it is really clean, but it's also doesn't have a ton of sulfur coming off. A lot of Kolsch strains and our alt strain 1007, and I mentioned the Kolsch strain is 2565. Tend to throw a little bit of sulfur, and I think that this strain just has a very, very nice, well balanced profile. So it's certainly one to try out and play around with. It's one of my favorites.
Great. So these will be in homebrew stores in the first week or so of April?
Exactly, yeah. And I think we're packaging it up today at the lab, and so those will be going out next week.
Awesome. So, get one of these. I know that our local homebrew stores sell out of them often. So if you are interested in using any of these three, the Flanders Golden Ale, the Berliner Weiss Blend, or the Kolsch 2, get them while you can. And thank you guys so much. Cheers.
Cheers. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you, Greg Doss and Jess Cod Hill from Y Yeast. Awesome, awesome for taking the time to talk to us.
Yep.
Ben, you said you used the first two strains on recent beers, not mixed together, of course.
Not mixed. I've only used the Berliner Weiss blend once because I have heard mixed reviews. People who want a really bracingly sour, like tart Berliner Weiss, have said it's not for them. But
right.
I tried it out, and as long as you are willing to bottle condition or age that bottle for at least, I would say, 3, 4, or 5 months, maybe longer, the Brett does contribute to the lacto that's in there, and you get a good sourness. It's still not as sour as some
right. and yes,
diehard sour beer people, right. But yeah, it's a good balanced beer. I like it. But the Flanders Golden Ale is, I love that for Belgian blondes, Belgian pale ales. You could do a saison with it. Yeah.
Nice. I just got some for 508, and I just made a pale ale with it, but it's fermenting as we speak.
Now, would you guys recommend that as a good beginner yeast for maybe, or...
The golden ale?
Yeah.
Yeah,
homebrewers
definitely.
That are just maybe haven't made a Belgian-style ale yet.
As long as they do have at least really basic temperature control, because mm-hmm. you don't want to ferment that at 85,
right.
90.
Right.
But now is a good time, because most of our apartments in New York City are still...
Yeah,
we're so still cool. cruising along yeah. on room temperature.
Yeah, yeah, I've only used it between mid 60s and I think 73 is the highest I've gone with it. But really nice profile, it's not a crazy Belgian character. It's not too over the top, but it's just real mild and clean and
Didn't Belgian. You win? Isn't that the one that got a yellow or blue ribbon? At one of the ribbon, yeah. A ribbon?
Yeah. For a Belgian,
Belgian pale ale.
You got either first or third, is what she's saying. Definitely not.
It was something. Never second. It was damn good. So, lastly, before we end, what would you guys, what kind of advice would you give for people that are interested in opening a homebrew supply shop? I mean, I think more and more, we have more and more homebrewers across the country. Mm-hmm. We definitely need more homebrewer supply shops.
And we need more homebrewers.
Make actually. Sure there's yeah. not one already within a 20-mile radius.
20 miles is pretty far.
20 miles.
About 5 miles.
10 miles?
freshness counts.
Yes, fresh. Especially with freshness grain and cleanliness.
And hops. Yeah, and yeast. Yeast is the biggest thing. And, you know, being able to rotate your yeast, turn it over quickly, has a huge impact on the beers that the customers are making. So if you as the homebrew shop don't pay attention to that, then your customers aren't going to make very good beer, and they're probably going to get sick of the hobby. You know, if their beer doesn't rival commercial beer eventually, after they get the hang of it, then they're not going to
get bored.
Yeah, they're not going to be into it for a long period of time. But if you want them to keep brewing, then you have to make sure they know how to make beer. So
yeah, freshness and cleanliness is something we've always been big proponents of, because there's a lot of really dirty homebrew shops that we've been to across the country, unfortunately. And, you know, it is a food item, mm-hmm. and we would like to treat it as a food item. And, you know, it's nice to have clean, fresh stuff, we think. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's a problem. I mean, if you're a homebrew store in an area where there aren't very many homebrewers,
exactly.
or specifically the kind of, you know, niche supplies, the niche malts that not many people use, you know, keep less of those around, I guess, as a homebrew store. So, and that obviously takes a little bit of time to...
It does. It takes
to figure out what your customers want.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You know, it makes ordering a little bit harder for us, maybe, but we keep everything pretty much as fresh as we possibly can.
Yeah.
But we do, in turn, make a lot of our customers angry because we do run out of things.
Exactly.
So it's a trade-off. You know, it's... But I would rather recommend a different yeast or a different hop to somebody than to give them an old one because I bought 2 years worth of a particular hop. So,
right.
You know, the beer is going to be better in the end if they're flexible on the ingredients rather than compromising on the freshness of it. So.
Yeah, think of it like going to the farmer's market.
Right.
You know? You never know what you're going to end up with sometimes.
You can always adapt your recipe to the ingredients.
Absolutely.
I haven't been homebrewing as much lately, but I used to roll in there and, like, you know, do my recipe on the brew pal based on what you guys had, and that's completely fine.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that at all. Absolutely. Definitely not.
Well, thank you guys so much. So your website is?
www.brooklynhomebrew.com.
Very good.
And they're at they're on 8th Street between 3rd and 4th Avenue in the Gowanus kind of park slopey area of Brooklyn, if you want to visit the physical location. Thank you guys so much for being on. Thanks to Greg and Jesse for the interview. And we will speak to you next Monday night at 7 p.m. We're going to be talking to Tommy from the Blind Tiger. He's chef at the Blind Tiger. We're talking about cooking with fermented foods with beer and kimchi and honey and all kinds of stuff.
All of it.
Beautiful. Sauerkraut?
Sauerkraut, I mean, he does a great job with the Blind Tiger, and we're excited to hear his tips and tricks.
And he's an excellent guy.
Yep. So thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.